Mr. Vandemar was hungry. So they walked back through Trafalgar Square.
"Scare her," muttered Mr. Croup disgustedly. "Scare her! That we should be brought to this!"
Mr. Vandemar had found half a prawn and lettuce sandwich in a waste bin and was gently tearing it into small pieces, which he was tossing down onto the flagstones in front of him, attracting a small flock of peckish late-night pigeons.
"Should have followed my idea," said Mr. Vandemar. "Would have scared her lots more if I'd pulled his head off while she wasn't looking, then put my hand up through his throat and wiggled my fingers about. They always scream," he confided, "when the eyeballs fall out."
He demonstrated with his right hand, stabbing up with his fingers and then wiggling them about. Mr. Croup was having none of it.
"Why get so squeamish at this stage in the game?" he asked.
"I'm not squeamish, Mr. Croup," said Vandemar. "I like it when the eyeballs fall out. Peepers and terrywags."
More grey pigeons out past their bedtime strutted over to peck at the fragments of bread and prawn and to disdain the lettuce.
"Not you," said Mr. Croup. "The governor. Kill her, kidnap her, scare her. Why doesn't he make up his mind?"
Mr. Vandemar had run out of the sandwich he had been using as bait, and now he made a dash into the crowd of pigeons who took to the wing with some clacking noises and the occasional grumbling coo.
"Well caught, Mr. Vandemar," said Mr. Croup approvingly.
Mr. Vandemar was holding a surprised and upset pigeon, which grumbled and fidgeted in his grasp and pecked ineffectually at his fingers. Mr. Croup sighed dramatically.
"Well, anyway, we've certainly put the cat amongst the pigeons now," he said with relish.
Mr. Vandemar held the pigeon up to his face. There was a crunching noise as he bit off its head and commenced to chew. The security guards were directing the museum's guests to a hallway that seemed to be functioning as some kind of holding area. Dor ignored the guards entirely and set off into the museum halls with Richard trailing along behind her. They went through the Egyptian rooms, up several flights of back stairs, and into a room marked Early English.
"According to this scroll thingy," she said, "the Angelus is in this room somewhere."
Then Dor looked down at her scroll some more and looked around the hall more carefully. She made a face.
"Oh,"
she explained, and took off back down the stairs the way they had come. Richard had an intense feeling of déjà vu before realizing that, yes, of course this felt familiar. It was how he had spent his weekends in the Jessica days, which were starting to seem, already, like things that had happened to someone else a long, long time ago.
The Angelus wasn't in that room then?" asked Richard.
"No, it wasn't there,"
said Dor a little more fiercely than Richard felt the question had actually warranted.
"Oh," he said, "I only wondered."
They went into another room. Richard wondered if he were starting to hallucinate from a surfeit of Earl's Court sugar or from sensory deprivation.
"I can hear music," he said.
It sounded like a string quartet. "The party," said Dor. "Right. The people in the dinner jackets they had queued up with. No, the Angelus didn't seem to be here either." Dor walked into the next hall along and Richard trailed in her wake. He wished he could be of more use.
"This Angelus," he said, "what does it look like?"
For a moment he thought she was going to reprimand him simply for asking. But she stopped, rubbed her forehead.
"This just says it's got a picture of an angel on it. But it can't be that hard to find. After all," she added hopefully, "how many things with angels on them are there here?"